Good afternoon. This is Bob Krueger with Thought for Food for March of 2021. This program is heard on the third Wednesday of the month at 4 p.m. and repeated on the third Saturday of the month at 3 p.m. It's intended for a blind and print-impaired audience, but hopefully it'll be of interest to everyone. The month of March has several days to remember. The Star-Spangled Banner was adopted as our national anthem on March 3rd in 1931. The Girl Scouts of America celebrate their birthday on the 12th, 1912. Daylight saving time begins on the 14th, St. Patrick's Day on the 17th. Passover begins on the 27th, and Palm Sunday is 28th. National Vietnam Veterans Day is the 29th. In March are many birthdays in my family. My mother, my wife, two brothers, a brother-in-law, a special nephew, and a son-in-law. All have March birthdays. I'll run out of birthday cards. The hottest item in the burger business is chicken. At least 10 major U.S. fast food chains have introduced fried chicken sandwiches in the past few months or are set to shortly. Many of those peddling the new poultry items are better known as hamburger chains, including McDonald's, Shake Shack, and Hardee's. Restaurant operators grappling with slowdowns and restrictions brought on by COVID-19 pandemic aim to capture consumers' enthusiasm for crispy breaded chicken sandwiches. That fervor has helped build Chick-fil-A into one of the nation's top fast food chains over the past 10 years and made Popeye's Louisiana Kitchens offering a social media sensation after its 2019 debut. A chicken sandwich war, as industry competitors describe it, means diners have lots of options, such as a Korean-style one at Shake Shack, a McDonald's virgin top with spicy pepper sauce, and a new KFC offering that the chain bills as its best chicken sandwich ever. The sandwich craze is also bringing lasting changes to the restaurant business, with owners spending thousands of dollars on new equipment for battering chicken fillets to compete for what some franchisees say is a future to eating out. Shake Shack began selling its new fried chicken sandwiches in the burger chain South Korean restaurants before it made its U.S. debut. One of the first items it put on menus during the pandemic was a spicy chicken sandwich. "We just want to sell more chicken," said Shake Shack's CEO, Randy Gerardi. "People are always going to love burgers and chicken, and we want to be known for both." The largest restaurant and convenience store chains promote 213 chicken sandwiches through November of last year, according to industry research firm Technomic. Many of these sandwiches have found a permanent place on menus. Fast food restaurants remain bastions of beef, with Big Macs, Whoppers, and other burgers outselling breaded chicken sandwiches by roughly 3-1, according from the market research firm NDP Group. Beyond fast food, though, chicken has been America's meat of choice for decades. Chicken overtook beef in 1992 as the most consumed meat per capita in America, according to the USDA. Consumers bought 1.4 billion units of chicken and beef last year in grocery stores, according to Nielsen figures. The number of fast food customers who ate a chicken sandwich rose 21% last year from 2019, outpacing burgers, roast beef, and other similar items, according to Technomic surveys. "It's hard not to succumb to temptation," said Minnie Finley, a Florida stay-at-home mom and former restaurateur who likes to sample sandwiches from fast food chains. Chick-fil-A's signature chicken breast sandwich with pickles on a buttered toasted bun helped them make the Georgia-based company the third biggest U.S. restaurant chain by domestic sales, behind McDonald's and Starbucks. Fanatical diners camp out ahead of the chain's new restaurant openings, and a Chick-fil-A overtook KFC as the leading U.S. chicken chain by domestic sales in 2011, according to Technomic. The launch of Popeye's chicken sandwich spawned long lines at restaurants and a temporary shortage that sent the chain searching for supplies. The restaurant brand's international-owned chain sales grew by double-digit percentages that have remained elevated since. Others have seen the success and are catching up, said Popeye's president in an interview about the sandwich. The jumbo-sized boneless chicken breast favored for such products is typically the poultry industry's most profitable cut. The average price for a boneless, skinless chicken breast last year was $1.01 a pound, the lowest level in more than 30 years. The price had been under $1 a pound since August until it crept back above the level recently, according to data compiled by market research firm Yoner Berry. Said down restaurant closures and export restrictions have helped build supplies. The quantity of frozen breast meat in U.S. cold storage facilities in late November stood 23% above last year's levels. Some in the chicken industry say the new sandwiches could send prices higher. Hailing the new chicken competition are poultry producers who face pandemic constrained dining and surging grain prices. We wish all the participants much success, said Joe Sanderson, CEO of Sanderson Farms, the third largest U.S. poultry producer after Tyson Foods and Pilgrim's Pride Corporation. Chicken sandwiches tend to be more profitable than beef when sold in restaurants, as they draw on a cheaper ingredient, according to research firm Revenue Management Solutions. Chicken sandwiches typically cost less than big burgers, a positive draw for budget-conscious consumers, the firm says. Restaurant chains and franchises are investing heavily in the battle. KFC said it worked with six bakeries to find a bun able to handle its quarter-pound white meat fillet that made its nationwide debut in February, a chicken patty about 20% larger than its existing crispy option. Church's chicken owners spent about $3,000 per restaurant to buy equipment to make the chain's new chicken sandwich, while Burger King owners are buying battering stations in kitchens as they test a hand-breaded chicken sandwich. At McDonald's, which hasn't had a Southern-style battered chicken sandwich on its U.S. menus nationwide for years, franchises are pushing for one. We can't afford to be last in a category that's clearly the future of fast food. The National Owners Association, a group of McDonald's franchisees in the U.S., said in an email to members recently. Responding to customer demand, McDonald's said it would begin selling a crispy chicken sandwich with crinkle-cut pickles on a white buttered potato bun, while adding two other chicken sandwiches to their permanent menu. It seems that chicken sandwiches are the upcoming rage. A new Los Angeles food chain will turn up the heat on the fried chicken race when it moves to the Triangle later this year. The first casual chain, Dave's Hot Chicken, announced it will open 10 locations in North Carolina, including the Triangle, Fayetteville, Wilmington, and Jacksonville. The majority will open in the Triangle, said Katie Weingart, the operating partner of the local franchise group, which also owns multiple Blaze Pizza locations in North Carolina. Popularized in Nashville and beloved for its searing spice hot chicken, eased its way into the mainstream over the past 10 years. Dave's Hot Chicken began as a pop-up in Los Angeles in 2012 and grew to seven brick-and-mortar shops in California. The company's entry into North Carolina is part of a larger franchising blitz, as Dave puts, locations in Canada, Chicago, and Texas. The chicken at Dave's is boneless, served as tenders or sandwiches. Seven spice levels escalate from tepid no spice to the glowing Red Reaper. Sides include fries, mac and cheese, and kale slaw. Beer and wine will be served as well. The chicken sandwich world hasn't been the same since Popeye's debuted its new sandwich in 2019, selling out of a two-month supply in 2 weeks and challenging Chick-fil-A's stranglehold on the fried chicken market. Locally, Raleigh's Ashley Christensen announced last year plans to open a new fast-casual restaurant devoted to sandwiches, BB's Crispy Chicken. Currently, Dave's is still scouting the Triangle for locations, Weingart said, with an aim to open the first one this fall. We don't have any leases signed yet, but we're actively trying to find the right spot, she said. We're looking everywhere in the Triangle, somewhere that's going to pop. Due to COVID-19, Miss Weingard said she hasn't ventured out to California to try Dave's in person, but that the company shipped her ingredients to recreate the hot chicken at home. Miss Weingard says fans of spice will love it a lot. I'm not afraid of spice, but I tell you it's hot. It seems that over the past decade, people's taste for hot has really increased. Coconut oil continues to be widely touted as a miracle food, proponents including a slew of celebrities claiming it promotes weight loss, lowers blood pressure, protects against heart disease, increases energy, reduces inflammation, and even counters Alzheimer's disease. Plus, it tastes great, so what could be bad? When I see a product with a long list of things it's supposed to do, I know it couldn't possibly be true, said Marion Nestle, a New York University specialist on nutrition and food policy. Coconut oil has acquired a healthful aura as a superfood, and a lot of people believe it's true. They're guilty of magical thinking and need to stop and think. They're trying to sell me something. Nevertheless, a survey conducted in 2016 found that 72% of Americans viewed coconut oil as a healthy food. The time is long overdue to relieve coconut oil of its halo that scientific evidence shows it doesn't deserve, and instead consumers a chance to use the $40 they spent on a 32-ounce jar of coconut oil to invest in foods that can actually enhance their health. We hope the science-based evidence that follows will convince you to relegate coconut oil at least to the status of ice cream, an occasional treat best used in modest amounts because you enjoy its flavor and texture. First, let's examine exactly what coconut oil is. Coconut oil is not really an oil, at least not at room temperatures, for most people living in the Northern Hemisphere. It's more like butter or beef fat, solid when cold. That's the first clue to the fact that unlike most other oils derived from plants that primarily contain unsaturated fatty acids, coconut oil is highly saturated fat, 87% saturated. In fact, far higher than butter, 63%, or beef fat, 40%. Most experts recommend limiting saturated fats, which can drive up cholesterol levels and lead to clogged arteries. Nor is coconut oil a diet food. Like other vegetable oils, a teaspoon of coconut oil supplies 117 calories, 15 more than a tablespoon of butter. Perhaps you've heard the claim that the primary fatty acid in coconut oil, called lauric acid, doesn't act like saturated fat in the body. Not true. Its actions most clearly mimics that of beef tallow and butter, both of which can promote atherosclerosis heart disease, the nation's leading killer. To understand better how coconut oil behaves when ingested, two experts, Dr. Frank M. Sachs, nutrition and cardiovascular disease specialist at Harvard University School of Public Health, and Dr. Philip Greenland, professor of cardiology at the Feinberg School of Medicine in Chicago. Dr. Sachs said it's been known for a long time that coconut oil raises blood levels of artery-damaging LDL cholesterol, and the newest research has strengthened that understanding. In preparing an editorial for the medical journal Circulation, he said, I could find nothing in the scientific literature to support advertising claims that coconut oil has some beneficial effects. Dr. Greenland echoed that assessment, stating that the market of coconut oil is confusing. It's trying to sell it as a healthy fat, but those who know its composition don't think that at all. One claim made for coconut oil is that it's undisputed. It can raise blood levels of HDL cholesterol, which for a long time was thought to protect against heart disease. However, a clear-cut health benefit of HDL cholesterol is yet to be demonstrated in people. Dr. Sachs said genetic studies and HDL-raising drugs have not as yet supported a causal relationship between HDL cholesterol and cardiovascular disease. The team's reviews of 21 studies of coconut oil consumption prompted the conclusion that consuming coconut products that contain fiber such as coconut flesh and flour and a diet rich in polyunsaturated fats and absence and excessive calories from refined carbohydrates would not pose a risk for heart disease, but the researchers found no evidence that could justify substituting coconut oil for other unsaturated plant oils. Or, as Ms. Nestle put it, if you like the way it tastes, in limited amounts it's fine, but it's by no means a superfood. However, she said, if you want to use coconut oil on your hair or skin, no problem. There seems to be no scientific information as to anything positive about coconut oil as a superfood. It seems that every month we lose a food pioneer in our area. The latest, Edward Big Ed Watkins, the restaurant owner who kept country cooking alive in downtown Raleigh. He died. He was 88 years old. Mr. Watkins, the founder of Big Ed's restaurant, died from COVID-19-related pneumonia, his wife Linda reported. 3 weeks ago, Mr. Watkins had been seriously injured in a car wreck, suffering cracked ribs and a cut on his head. He later contracted COVID-19 at a rehabilitation facility while recovering from the accident. Linda Watkins said he first tested positive for COVID-19 about 2 weeks previous, but his health improved before going into cardiac arrest. The first Big Ed's restaurant opened in 1958, and other Wake County restaurants followed. In 1989, Big Ed's City Market opened in downtown Raleigh, bringing farmhouse-style cooking to the capital city. The restaurant remains famous for its sizable biscuits and pancakes and still serves traditional dishes like hog brains. He grew up in the country and was a country man, his wife said. We liked home-cooked food, and we figured that's what people really wanted. Big Ed retired in 2006, selling Big Ed's to Lynn and Sam Hobgood, who have opened two new Big Ed's in recent years with locations in North Raleigh and Garner. We're very saddened to hear the passing of Big Ed. Founder Sam Hobgood said, Big Ed's family sends prayers and good wishes out to the San Watkins family. Big Ed was a career restaurateur, Hobgood said. His presence was important to the community and the culture of the community in downtown Raleigh. Mr. Hobgood said Big Ed Watkins continued to dine in the restaurant nearly every day after selling it 15 years ago, saying that he often ordered collard greens and country ham. Sam Hobgood said that six of his employees who work for Big Ed still work at the restaurant. He's always been supportive of the restaurant and continues to come and dine with us, Mr. Hobgood said. He was there even during these times, which says a lot about his character. Many of his friends could say they just don't like him. They don't make them like him anymore. PepsiCo Incorporated didn't expect people to stop munching on Cheetos anytime soon. The company said it projects a gradual rebound in the soda business as COVID-19 vaccines roll out and consumers head back to restaurants and other venues, while growth in its food business will endure as people continue to work and snack at home. I think it'll evolve slowly over time, said PepsiCo's chief finance officer, Hugh Johnson. I'm not expecting any kind of dramatic change. One of the habits, Mr. Johnson said, he expects people will keep as life returns to normal is eating breakfast at home, a trend that has boosted PepsiCo's Quaker Oats business. What we've seen, as people like breakfast at home, and I think they'll probably continue that pattern, he said. Sales of Cheetos, Tostitos, oatmeal, and pancakes have propelled the snack and beverage giant through the COVID-19 pandemic, offsetting soda sales weakened by the closing of restaurants, movie theaters, and sports stadiums. The company's North American beverage sales volume fell 1.5% in 2020 and was flat for the fourth quarter. After a sharp drop in the second quarter, soda sales improved in the second half of the year as people ventured out more and made more purchases at convenience stores. Rival Coca-Cola in early February said a worse-than-expected winter of pandemic-related restrictions led to declines in its soda sales. Meanwhile, Molson Coors Beverage Company reported its net sales revenue fell 7.7% in its most recent quarter, partly offset by sales growth in the United States. PepsiCo said it expects revenue to grow by a percentage in the high digits and for its adjusted earnings to grow by a high single-digit percentage. Their revenues grew 5.7% in the latest quarter. PepsiCo also said it would increase its annualized dividend to $4.30 a share, up from $4.09 a share, beginning with a dividend paid in June. In a related story, we learned that Kraft Heinz Company has a new plan, sell more food. So far, it appears to be working. Since the coronavirus pandemic in the U.S., food companies like Kraft Heinz have benefited from people eating more at home. They have struggled to keep up with the demand because of production capacity constraints and endured higher costs from implementing new safety measures at factories and other challenges. In mid-February, Kraft Heinz said it had a plan to transform into a company focused on growth from one driven by profit margin. It's going faster than it anticipated in the new year. We have momentum at our back, said CEO Miguel Patricio. We saw very strong consumption gains in January and February. Kraft Heinz comparable sales rose up 8% in the U.S. in the fourth quarter, and about half its business, such as Lunchable, Ore-Ida potatoes, and Heinz ketchup, gained the market share. The test for the makers of Kraft mac and cheese, Maxwell House, and Oscar Mayer is whether it maintains the pace of its recovery after years of missteps since the merger in 2015. A heightened focus on reducing costs while consumers shifted to buying newer, trendier brands led the company to write down the value of its brands by nearly $20 billion over the last 2 years. Mr. Patricio, who joined the company in 2019, said Kraft Heinz is investing more in improving its brands and concentrating on fewer product development ideas. Like Kellogg's, Campbell Soups, and others, Kraft Heinz is increasing online advertising to hold the interest of people who came to its brands during the pandemic. They raised market spending by $100 million last year. It also increased production capacity of its highest demand products by 30% since August, in part by decreasing the variety of product sizes and variation it makes by 16%. It plans to further reduce variety this year, which saves money, Mr. Patricio said. Kraft Heinz earnings topped analyst predictions for the fourth quarter. Adjusted to exclude one-time factors, profit included 11% for the prior year. Kellogg CEO Steve Cahillane said that the recent slowdown in grocery sales growth from earlier in the pandemic hasn't been as dramatic as he expected because of the resurgence of the virus. For the same reason, Kellogg's on-the-go snacks and its business selling food to outlets like schools didn't improve as much as they expected. We're getting smarter, he said, but it changes every day. Kellogg says its comparable sales rose less than 1% in America in the fourth quarter. It didn't keep up with demand for some brands, such as Frosted Flakes, which lost market share. We just couldn't make any more, he said. Kellogg said it's expanding production capacity. It's also increasing its market spending to the benefit of Applejack cereals, Nutri-Grain snacks, and other brands. PepsiCo Incorporated doesn't expect people to stop munching on Cheetos anytime soon. The company said it projects a gradual rebound in its soda business as COVID-19 doesn't expect people to anytime soon. The company said it projects a gradual rebound in its soda business and people as vaccines roll out and people head back to restaurants and other venues, while growth in its food business will endure as people continue to work from home and snack at home. I think it will evolve slowly over time, said PepsiCo Chief Financial Officer Hugh Johnson. I'm not expecting any kind of a dramatic change. One of the habits, Mr. Johnson said, he expects people will keep even as life returns to normal is eating breakfast at home, a trend that has boosted PepsiCo's Quaker Oats business. What we've seen is people like breakfast at home, and I think they will probably continue that pattern, he said. Sales of Cheetos, Tostitos, oatmeal and pancakes have propelled the snacks and beverage giant through the coronavirus pandemic, offsetting soda sales weakened by the closing of restaurants, movie theaters, and sports stadiums. The company's North Carolina, North American beverage sales fell by 1.5% in 2020. After a sharp drop in the second quarter, soda sales improved in the second half of the year as people ventured out and made more purchases at convenience stores. Rival Coca-Cola said a worse-than-expected winter of pandemic-related restrictions led to declines in the soda sales. Meanwhile, Molson Coors Beverage Company reported its sales fell 7.7% in the recent quarter. PepsiCo has said it expects revenue to grow this year in the middle digits and for adjusted earnings to grow by single-digit percentages. Their revenue grew 7.5% in the latest quarter. A headline in the News Observer reads, "Raleigh's been waiting on this sandwich shop for years." The story continues. Nearly 5 years in the making, ish, that's I-S-H, Delicatessen has been one of Mark Raleigh's most anticipated restaurants for a long time. This spring, owner Matt Fern's sandwich shop dream is finally coming true, with plans to open ish in the former pharmacy cafe space within the Person Street Pharmacy in Raleigh. On the surface, ish is a sandwich shop, nodded toward the great deli traditions but never becoming one. It's still a bit Jewish, still sort of Italian, still sort of celebrates the South, Mr. Fern said. He's a veteran of Raleigh's restaurant scene and former beverage director for Ashley Christensen's AC Restaurants Group, which he left in 2018 to work on the deli that would eventually become ish. In 2019, ish was announced as a piece of a Bouquet Longleaf Hotel in downtown Raleigh, and after COVID-related delays, the deli near the hotel no longer made sense. Mr. Fern started looking for new spaces around Raleigh, and the move from Longleaf to Person Street made ish a slightly smaller deli with seating for about 25 inside and a dozen outside. The move will also condense the menu somewhat, a menu that will draw on roughly 60 different sandwiches in rotation. Mr. Fern's deli aims to embrace the kind of and sort of parts of life, blending the worlds of a Jewish deli and Italian deli and all the bits and pieces that might be tasty in a sandwich. Some renovations will be made to the former pharmacy cafe space, including expanding the kitchen slightly and moving the bar. Before the pandemic, opening a sandwich shop anywhere downtown meant feeding the lunch crowd of nearby workers. With many companies still working from home, downtown is emptied out, and lunch-oriented spots have really suffered. Moving into the Oakwood neighborhood, Mr. Fern expects to find work from the home crowd as well as nearby office workers until the pandemic is over. Person Street has become its own little dining enclave, home to some of Raleigh's best restaurants. Scott Crawford runs it. We've run out of time for today's episode of Thought for Food. Be sure to listen next time. We hope you've enjoyed it. I'm Bob Kruger, reading for the North Carolina Radio Reading Service. If you have any questions or comments, please call us at 919-832-5138. 919-832-5138.